From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of January, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. We'll get an update on pork production in the United States as it looks for calendar year 2026. And then we'll turn our attention to the bridge payments USDA and the Trump administration will be sending to row crop producers across the nation by the end of February, and how the Ag Econ team right here on campus thinks producers should use them in the coming weeks and months, and what they might mean to their bankers as well. And as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Mike Tenora today. He's at T-Storm Weather in Naperville, Illinois. T-Storm.net online, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at WILLAG.org, or search us out in your favorite podcast applications, including Apple, Spotify, and of course, on YouTube.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Corn futures in Chicago finished the nearby March contract at $4.46 a bushel. That was 0.75 cents lower for the day. That's in the March. The May at $4.54 unchanged. December at $4.64.5, 0.75 cents higher. March soybeans down 5.75 cents. A settlement price there at $10.61.25. May at $10.73.25, down 5.5 cents. And November beans, $10.73, down 2.25. Bean meal futures, $1.80 lower, $3.60, and the bean oil futures at $49.45, 14 cents higher. Wheat futures soft red, $5.18, unchanged for the day. In the March contract, the hard red, March at $5.30, down 1.25. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $235.27.5 per 100 pounds, 75 cents higher. Feeder cattle were up $2.22.5 for the afternoon. Their finish at $357.72.5, and lean hogs at $85.87.5, $1.07.5 higher. Crude oil at $57.78 a barrel, up $1.79 at this hour. Diesel fuel or heating oil, 6.2 cents per gallon higher, at $2.11.8 in gasoline on the RBOB today, at $1.76, that's 6.6 cents higher. Ethanol in Chicago unchanged at $1.59.5 per gallon. The S&P 500 around 8.5 points lower. The NASDAQ down around 215 points. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 49,485. That's up 246 points for the day. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Do visit our website at willag.org, WILLAG.org, where by about 6 o'clock this evening, you'll find our latest edition of Commodity Week posted, including our panelists this week, Naomi Bloom. She's with TotalFarmMarketing.com, along with Ellen Dearden of Ag Review and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities. That'll air tomorrow on our home station at willag.org, WILL, and on many of these radio stations tomorrow and over the weekend. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what's happening in the world of agriculture. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us in the midst of the winter meeting season. I bet you're on the road. Where are you today?
Yeah, I'm in Kearney, Nebraska here today. So I've got one shortly and then another one this evening before I get to come home. So, you know, it's that time of year. Everybody's wanting to talk markets. So I don't know. It's certainly a concerned crowd, I think, for the most part, that I've been in front of so far. But as always, I believe everyone's got a little bit of hope and optimism that maybe things will get a little better than what we've seen here these last couple of years.
Did you plumb them to see what their yields were like when they finished up for the year and what their thoughts are, or yours maybe, as we look forward to the Monday World Ag Supply and Demand estimates and, of course, those final numbers in the crop production report?
You know, it just depends on where you're at, Todd. You know, I was in northwestern Iowa yesterday, and I'll tell you what, there was a lot of guys that didn't have the yields they were wanting to see. And you ask those guys, hey, and gals, you know, what do you think USDA is going to do? And they say they think yields are going to go down. And then you get in this part of the world, and some of these guys will tell you that actually their dry land corn is better than what they've ever had. So, you know, I think it's a mixed bag. But by all means, there's certainly some locations, you know, that crop was significantly lower. I mean, I did talk to some folks in Iowa yesterday that told me, whereas their normal yields in the last couple, 3 years have been in that 230 to 260 range, they had a fair amount of sub 200 corn, but of course it was some of the areas that were super wet, had a lot of disease pressure. So, you know, it wasn't all sunshine and rainbows last year by any means. So it'll be very interesting what USDA has to say there on Monday.
What are they telling you, if anything, about that Tyson beef plant closing and what impact it might have on their local economies? Have you discussed that with them at all?
You know, I've talked to a couple guys before the meeting here today, and they're certainly frustrated with the whole situation. You know, just accessibility is one thing that they're bothered by. And so, you know, they feel like that it's just one more hurdle that they've got to overcome here. I mean, clearly the beef prices have been awfully strong here the last couple of years. There's no doubt. I mean, a lot of these guys have made a ton of money, but they still have to have an outlet to be able to go and process. And so that's a big issue. You know, yeah, you've got some local processors, of course. Whenever you take someone that large out of the mix, it definitely hurts your accessibility in a major way.
Okay, for the corn producers there, and I'm just wondering what they're thinking, if this plant closes down, does that mean that beef cattle production moves further to the west into the parts of far western Nebraska and Colorado and maybe Greeley and some of those places, and corn has to move that way too?
Yeah, I certainly think that's a possibility. I think there's still hope for some of these guys that, you know, if this plant shut down, maybe it'll get sold and you'll figure out some sort of a cooperative type situation come in there, because certainly there's a ton of cattle in this part of the world. But if that doesn't happen, there's no doubt, you know, you're looking at significant cattle production farther west that you're getting, as you suggested. You know, especially like in that northeastern quadrant of Colorado, there's a ton of cattle in that part of the world. So I certainly think that's a possibility, but these guys are sure holding out hope that's not what it comes down to.
I'm plumbing this a little bit because I want to know what they think, and you might think basis levels in their areas will do, and how that could back up into parts of Iowa and all the way to the Mississippi River.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's certainly a problem. And so they've been asking me, why is basis acting like it is throughout the Corn Belt? And, you know, there's no doubt that we're shipping some corn south into Mexico. You know, they've been our number one destination for corn. Got a lot of rail going that way, but by all means, the river system certainly can't float a full barge right now, first of all. You know, and second of all, you know, it's just one of those deals where the interior is not having to bid much against the river, because the business going through the river isn't near what it usually is. So, you know, I think that certainly a lot of concerns whenever it comes to basis, especially this time of year, which basis is typically going to be fairly weak.
What are you watching most closely coming into next week as related to those reports or anything else?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that with really strong weather in South America, there's just not much to talk about there. This report needs to be friendly. Doesn't mean it's going to be friendly. We certainly have to look at what U.S. and world carryouts look like. No doubt on corn, we're using more corn than what we're growing, but at the same time, world feed grain situation concerns me a little bit. We've really built wheat stocks this last year, so hopefully we'll get some good news here Monday. Maybe they drop the yield, but if they do, I'm afraid that they're going to take some demand with it. So I'm not looking for a wildly bullish report, but I'd sure settle on something a little bit supportive.
Anything else before I let you go for the day?
No, I think we're good to go. I sure hope that we get that kind of bullish enthusiasm next week. But if we don't, you know, I think we've got to buckle down and understand that it's maybe going to take a little time for able to work these prices a little bit higher.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net, joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. One other item related to the marketplace, this is from Jason Frank, an agricultural economist at the University of Missouri, and an article that he's written this week for the FarmDoc Daily website. The latest numbers from USDA, he says, suggest pork producers will see lower prices this year than last. Still, Franken's quarterly hog price projections based on the hog inventories and farrowing intentions for 2026 reflect a standard seasonal pattern, he says, with prices peaking in the second and third quarters, Franken, of course, an agricultural economist at the University of Missouri, and writing on the FarmDoc website, he expects hogs will average about $85.43 a pound in the first quarter of 2026, jump by $10 to that $95 to $97 range in the second and third quarters, and close out the year just at $83 a hundred pounds. Record levels of pigs per litter, he says, reaching nearly 12 at 11.93 in late 2025, and increased farrowing intentions for the first half of 2026 are expected to keep slaughter levels above year-ago figures for July to December, and that results in that $83 number that we just went through. The overall result is a projected slight increase in total pork production, he says, for 2026 when compared to 2025. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Nick Paulson, agricultural economist at the U of M. He, Gary Schnitke, Jonathan Kappas, and Carl Zuloff have penned an article for the FarmDoc Daily website entitled Farmer Bridge Assistance Program Payment Rates. Those numbers were released by USDA just before the end of the year. Corn payments per acre at $44.36, soybeans at $30.88 per acre. What's important about these numbers from your perspective, Nick?
I don't know if the specific numbers themselves are as important as, I guess, just now we sort of have the certainty in terms of, you know, the level of support that producers can expect, and maybe even more importantly, that producers' lenders can expect to receive from this bridge program here in, what, the next 6 to 7 weeks. You know, FarmDoc had put out some, there was estimates out there beyond FarmDoc as well, but mid-December, FarmDoc put some estimates out for what we thought these bridge payments would look like. And by and large, I don't think there were really any surprises in the final numbers that USDA put out on December 31st. In terms of the crops that we tend to focus on most here in the Midwest, I think, you know, maybe the one positive surprise was that the soybean payment rate did end up being $5 or $6 per acre higher than what we had estimated. But you know, both the corn and the wheat. Payment rates were pretty much in line with where we were at in mid-December. And so no big surprises there. But again, it does provide the certainty in terms of, you know, total dollars that any individual farm operation can maybe be counting on here by the end of February.
Do these payments make producers whole? And by that, I mean, do they get back to break even or a slight profit because of the payments for the 2025-6 crop year?
So that's a question I've tried to be a little more careful in answering in the last few months. So, you know, we track averages, we do regional averages, and I think those are very, very good, solid indicators that we have for the state, because it's based off of information from actual Illinois farms that are cooperating members of the Illinois Farm Business Farm Management Association. And so what those regional averages suggest based on those payment rates for the bridge program that were released is that for our northern and central Illinois regions, those bridge payments, in addition to what we're expecting, will come from the ARC and PLC programs for 2025, but not until October. We would be looking at close to or even slightly above break-even average returns now for those northern and central regions. Southern Illinois, we're still looking at an average return that would be negative, even with the bridge assistance and ARC and PLC and crop insurance. You know, but again, I'm trying to be more careful when we talk about those things because those are averages. And so, you know, there's, you know, half the farms are below that average, roughly half the farms are above that average. So there are definitely still farms that bridge payment will not make them whole. And there are also farmers that, you know, are going to be doing even better than break even because of these bridge payments.
You have cautioned farmers over the last several months that when these payments come in, they might not want to use them as the MFP payments in the first Trump administration mostly were used, which was to provide the opportunity to wait for higher prices, and rather maybe instead to service debt loads. Why is that the case?
Well, I think, and this is not going to be avoidable, even if farmers, you know, held on to these payments or used them to pay down debt. I mean, they're providing liquidity that wasn't there prior to the bridge program being announced or existing. And you know, I guess, you know, our thinking on this, and I think a lot of farmers realize this. I've even heard more farmers than even during the MFP years say this straight out, is that, you know, they recognize that this is a short-term Band-Aid. You know, there's no doubt that a lot of farm businesses are going to benefit in the short term and arguably need this support to get through to the 2026 crop year, make sure that crop gets in the ground. But in terms of, you know, using these things to you know, bid up cash rents, make further investments in the farm, you know, if I was giving advice to a typical operation, particularly one that might be in more of a financially stressed situation right now, I'd be looking at, you know, probably paying down debt, or if that's not necessary, you know, putting this in into savings, holding it as working capital, because as we look ahead to 2026 numbers, it looks to be a kind of a repeat of 2025, 2024, and 2023, with some negative numbers projected in those averages. Fact of the matter is we're still in a situation where we've got prices that are low, not by historical standards, or even low relative to where we think, you know, the global market fundamentals suggest they should be, but prices that are, you know, below break evens based on what's implied by our current cost of production. So we still have work to do to either try to bring prices up, ideally with, you know, some demand increases, or, you know, more realistically, we got to keep chipping away at some of these production costs and get those down so we can get back into a longer term situation of viability and profitability. Otherwise, we're going to be, you know, rinsing and repeating and looking for another bridge payment a year from now or even sooner than that.
Nick, thank you much.
Thank you.
That's Nick Paulson, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, a member of the Farm Doc team. You can find his article on the Farm Doc Daily website right now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Let's turn our attentions now to the global growing regions. Mike Tenura is here. He's the president and CEO at T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online out of Naperville, Illinois. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us. Hope you had a great Christmas and New Year's. But we do need to turn your attention to South America again, our first chance to get a look at what you've been thinking as it's related to both Argentina and Brazil. Let's start with Argentina. I take it there's some complicating factors there that we need to keep an eye on, and they're both on the wet and the dry side. Why don't you start with the wet piece first?
Well, yeah, thanks a lot, Todd, and Happy New Year to you as well. There is a complicated story developing in Argentina. If you look at rainfall over the last 30 to 60 days, it's been pretty dry. Now, is this a historical drought? No, but it is pretty dry. And it is notable. The thing that's going to happen over the next 5 to 10 days is that we're going to see the northern third of corn and soybeans in Argentina turn a lot wetter. An eruption of thunderstorms is going to develop over the next 6 to 12 hours, and that'll be phase one of more than one thunderstorm event for that area. So we think that about a third of that crop is going to be looking pretty ideal once we get a week or so out from now. As you move to the south, though, there's going to be a very sharp line between heavy rain and no rain. And because of that, it looks like the southern crops are going to end up turning pretty dry as we move forward over the next week or so. Now, we do need to keep in mind that there is a chance for some storms next week, but those don't look all that great. And we need to get about 2 to 2.5 inches of rain every 2 weeks to keep up with normal. And it doesn't look like we'll see anywhere near that, maybe half of that. And if that's the case, then we're going to see this story develop in Argentina where the northern third of crops are looking good and the southern half to two-thirds maybe not so much. So that's kind of the thing to monitor as we move through next week and into the following week.
The Brazilian growing season began dry. It turned wet. I'm wondering what conditions are on the ground. That's a big country, so a little bit different from the south to the north and maybe from west to east as well. But if you could give me your assessment, please.
Well, yeah, we can divide Brazil into two pieces for this discussion. And pretty much to start out, just like you said, we had pretty ideal rainfall over December. And that set up a situation where we were arguing that soil moisture was pretty much ideal for soybean development, at least as of a week or two ago. It has been changing a little bit, and it's the forecast, though, that has us a little more concerned than anything. So what's been going on over the last week or two is that some of the northern growing regions have been drying out. And even though it's not a big concern, the problem is that it looks pretty dry as we move forward over the next 10 days. An upper-level high is going to develop near Bahia, and this region includes about 20% of Brazil's soybean production. So they've been drying out over the last 2 weeks, and it looks like it's going to stay pretty dry for the next 10 days, and maybe a little bit beyond that. If that's the case, then you're going to need to start thinking a little bit about how that might affect yields there, because they plant the latest in this region, basically from October through November, and they need to start seeing some pretty good rains now, or that'll become a bit of a story. So it's kind of a mixed bag right there, with things changing a little bit to the dry side for about 20% of Brazil's soybeans. As you look to the south, they've had great rains over the course of the growing season, and a lot more is on the way. That same setup that's bringing thunderstorms to northern Argentina is going to expand into southern Brazil this weekend and then continue next week. So it'll be kind of a mixed bag in Brazil, with the southern 40% of soybeans having pretty ideal soil moisture, 20% not looking so good, maybe a little too dry, and the other 20% or 40% in between. So it's just a tricky story, as you can see, in South America, with basically some dry pockets in Argentina and Brazil, but also some wet pockets in each of those countries. And overall, it's just going to take a little bit more time to see how all this plays out.
We'll check back with you again next week to see how this story continues to develop. Thank you much for taking time with us today.
Thanks for having me, Todd. You have a great day.
You too. Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. He's in Naperville, Illinois. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Don't forget, we'll record our Commodity Week program this afternoon for use tomorrow on our home station and in part on many of these radio stations. Too, will air over the weekend on all of these stations. Be sure to visit willag.org this afternoon after 6 o'clock if you want to get an early listen to it. It'll be posted there. Or you can search out Commodity Week, or the Closing Market Report for that matter, in your favorite podcast applications. You have a great afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.